This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And now, it's time for the Bet Rivers Sportsbook pregame show with Hub Arkish, Patrick Manley, and Olin Krutz on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Brought to you by Bet Rivers Sportsbook. Go to BetRivers.com or download the Bet Rivers app from the App Store now. And MailMedChicago.com, where a full head of hair is the winning play.
Well, good morning, Chicago, and welcome into our Bears pregame show here at 670 The Score. I am Hub Arkish, along with my co-hosts, Patrick Manley and Olin Krutz. It is great to be with you this morning. We once again have an outstanding lineup for you. We're going to have a ton of fun today. Brian Finneran, former tight end for the Atlanta Falcons, now a radio host down in Atlanta, going to check in this hour and give us the view from the other side, if you will. And where are they now? Bears former offensive line coach Bob Wiley going to stop by. You get Wiley started with Krutz and Manley, and I'm sure we're going to have a good time with that. Mark Grody will be, well, he's in town. He's not in Atlanta, but he will give us the report on the Bears all week long from Hallis Hall. And then, of course, in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll give you our picks of the week, our Bet Rivers plays of the week, and we will have a visit from Dan Pompey. We'll take your phone calls along the way at 312-644-6767. You can text us at that number as well. And good morning, Olin. Good morning, Patrick. We're through the initial scare. There were reports late last night, during the evening, early this morning, that there might be some COVID cases in Atlanta, that possibly the game could be delayed or postponed. Reports now from NFL Network that is not a concern, that none of the Atlanta Falcons have tested positive, and that we should have a noon kickoff here in Chicago. They do have one Falcon, important player, actually, their rookie cornerback, A.J. Terrell, who did test positive. He's been placed on the COVID-19 reserve list. That was on Saturday. But as of this morning, no other Falcons testing positive, so the game should go on. All in this kind of stuff, this is what makes this whole season so weird and so different. But I guess at this point, we're just happy everybody else is healthy for the moment and that the game will go on as scheduled.
Yeah, and you know better than anybody, Hub, how much testing that they are doing right now. And actually, was going to ask you about all the new rules and how many guys they can actually activate from the practice squad in case a bunch of guys do test positive. The Falcons lose one more cornerback, which is good for the Bears, and the Bears' great season continues, Pat, with a few breaks here and there. But like you know, Pat, you get years like that, and you just got to ride them to wins.
No doubt. You know, like Olin, you talk about that during the week. You start reading the injury report and you start seeing, you know, limited. Is he going to be in or out? Is he going to be playing? You go back and watch tape and you really try to figure out how bad the ankle or hamstring is, like for Julio Jones. And they've got a lot of question marks looking on their roster here right in front of me, which is, I guess, good for the Bears again. But to go back to the COVID stuff, I think we all anticipated something to happen. And I am very happy to hear that, you know, unfortunately that he does have COVID, but everything is still okay, that the NFL is doing the right thing. You know, nobody tested positive for the Falcons. They're able to get the game played. I think this speaks volumes for the future of the league this year, and hopefully we can get through this with no hiccups. But, yeah, Olin, it's another game. You look at the Bears, and you take injury report now. You start getting into week three, week four, and keep going on. You take injury report versus injury report. And the Bears have won that the first 3 weeks.
You know, guys, it's really almost, it is stunning to me, actually, when you look at just what's going on in the world in general and the other sports. Terrell, who was the Falcons' first-round pick, and so I don't know that this is quite as significant as if it was Jalen Johnson for the Bears, even though he went in the second round, a starter from day one. Terrell been playing a lot for the Falcons as well. He is the first player in the league to test positive, you know, since the season started. So you get through two full weekends of games. Now you're coming up on week three. The first player to test positive, you know, whatever the league is doing, they're obviously getting something right. And I think it's also really encouraging that, you know, if he tested positive, obviously he had the virus for some period of time, was around the team, and yet every other player and member of the coaching staff has been tested and stayed negative. So, you know, hats off to the NFL so far. Hopefully they can maintain this. And now this becomes kind of a side story for this football game that should go off as scheduled. Guys, you got the Atlanta Falcons in an absolute must-win situation here at home. They don't want to go 0-3, drop their second straight game at home to start the season. You got a situation where head coach Dan Quinn was in trouble last year at the midpoint of the season after they got off to an awful, I believe it was a 2-5 start. And he then got, I'm sorry, it was a 0-5 start, and he got the dreaded vote in confidence. They instead finished 7-2. He kept his job, but now here they are struggling again. I know that Quinn is somewhat of a player's coach. It is particularly ironic that, you know, much like Matt Nagy was brought to Chicago for his offensive acumen, Quinn is a defensive specialist. And it's this Falcons defense that is the worst in the league. So all kinds of things all in for the Bears to prepare here for. You got a team that you got to figure is going to be on the razor's edge, really getting after it. But you also got the worst defense in the league. So hopefully this will be good for the Bears offense.
Yeah, and you got the worst defense in the league that, if the Bears are being honest with themselves, have played two pretty good offenses, right? And Russell Wilson, I mean, the level of quarterback play, when you turn the film on and you watch that man play quarterback, is unbelievable right now, what he's doing. And then how they lose to the Cowboys with that onside kick, I'll let our resident expert speak about that, is baffling. Their linebacker, and I studied this all week, so I'm going to give it a shot, Foye Oluokun, caused three fumbles in the first quarter. They go up big, Pat. I mean, I got to halftime and I pressed pause of the game and I was like, they lost this game.
Yeah.
That's just, it was just crazy. But they're going to be a challenge, I think, for the Bears, even with their injuries. They're still the best team the Bears have seen so far. Obviously, missing Julio would really hurt just because then they could really concentrate on Ridley. But I don't expect this. Unless they cause a bunch of turnovers, Pat, I don't expect this to be a walk-away win for the Chicago Bears.
No, Olin, I'm with you on that. I think this is a game where we're going to find out how good the Bears are being at 2-0 or how bad the Falcons are being at 0-2. And, you know, talking about that quarterback play of Russell Wilson the first week, that's, you know, that's MVP caliber style quarterbacking. And then Dak Prescott the second half played great. The Falcons' defense the last 2 weeks has given up the NFC Offensive Player of the week at those two quarterbacks. Yeah. So we'll see if Mitch can do that again. I don't know. But, you know, you talked about those turnovers. But, Olin, the Cowboys also tried two fake punts and failed.
Right.
So think about that field position.
It was amazing, man.
And still came back and won. Yeah. And then let's all finish it up with that onside kick. That was, Hub, you and I were on the post game, and I think I talked about it and tweeted you the photo or tweeted it out during the time that – Greg Zuerlein puts the ball down like a watermelon. I think he calls it a watermelon kick. So the front line of the Falcons is looking at it. The ball's up there with no tee. They don't know what's going on, so they're a little confused. They have the right to jump on the ball before 10 yards, but they act like maybe the ball's not going to get 10 yards, so they sit back, and the ball rolls right over the 10-yard line, and Dallas jumps on it, and it's just a miraculous play. And kudos to Bones Fossil, who's the special teams coach, and Zuerlein. They were together with the Rams before to come up with that and to execute it. And to pull off that win, which is, like you said, Olin, looking at that tape, you didn't see it happening at all.
I was laughing because I'm losing the Falcons special teams coach right now, his name, and he said
Ben Kudwika.
Yeah, and he said, use your coach speak. He said, I'll take the blame for that. But I did tell the players to jump on it. No. You can't have it both ways. Either you're gonna take the blame or you're not gonna blame the players. But it'll be interesting today, Hub, just because the first two teams that the Bears played They kind of played the Bears offense the same way. And obviously both Belichick disciples and Patricia and Graham for the Giants. And they both just gave the Bears the run pretty much. So it'll be interesting to see if Raheem, the defense corner for Atlanta, comes out and takes the run away and tries to force Mitch to beat him.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that you might as well try it because there ain't much else going right for you. And particularly, you know, the way that defense is played. You know, guys, the other thing we got to talk about here, though, is do they have the personnel to get it done? We got to watch this injury list and the actives very closely today because, you know, past this COVID scare, and yes, Terrell is a significant loss, they've got their top two pass rushers, Dante Fowler and Takaris McKinley, didn't practice all week long, as well as Julio Jones, who didn't practice all week long with a hamstring injury. So before we get to Julio and the offensive side of it, because they will light you up that way, they have not been able to create much pass pressure at all. Now there's a chance they'll be without one or possibly both of their top two pass rushers. Yeah, Raheem Morris has got choices to make here as to how he's going to try and defend the Bears. But guys, and again, these are the games. You see these games, you think, okay, how are the Bears going to lose this? The defense is awful. They're banged up. Their best players aren't going to be there. These are the ones where you go out and get beat by three touchdowns. I mean, it can happen. We know that in the NFL. But I just don't know, you know, what their options are as to how they can really try and take anything away from the Bears. Grady Jarrett's really good up front. And, you know, other than that, it's kind of hard to think of a lot of Falcons difference makers on that defense.
Yeah, well, and I think this is a game where we're going to find out, can the offense put some points on the board? I mean, you got to – there's more injuries, Hub. You got Ricardo Allen, the starting safety's right out. The backup cornerback, Kendall Sheffield's out. So you got a starter and a backup out. So you've got a bunch of guys out there that, you know, are young, not starters for a reason. So, you know, this is a – is it a get-right game for the offense? You know, can they put the points on the board that that Matt Nagy wants to see, and they should. If you look at the roster sitting here in front of me with everybody out, they should take advantage of these guys, but we'll see how they play it. Do they stick with the run, or that they see that they don't get to the passer and a lot of these DBs are out? Does he come out throwing the ball? And we'll see how Mitch deals with all that.
Yeah, and the reason we have so many questions about this Bears team is, look, if the Bears do win today and Detroit loses in Arizona, which you think is possible, and the Giants lose to the 49ers, then after the Bears win, all the teams they beat will be 0-9, right? So that's why so many questions about this team and who they actually are. And then last week in the second half, in the first half of the Detroit game, really the first three quarters, the scoring points problem rears its head again, right? So they come out, they score 17 points. They scored three touchdowns at the end of the Detroit game. But for that whole second half with the two turnovers against the Giants, you're wondering what happened to that offense and why can't we put the ball in the end zone again? And, you know, when you go back and look at the Bears film and you're just trying to find playmakers, guys who really scare you, I tell you what, Pat and Hub, one thing that really baffles me since they just gave him money again is how they do not use Tariq Cohen anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, that really baffles me because if you go back and study from when Tariq was a rookie, even under Dow Loggins, really, if you look at this team, it's like they're trying to force Miller or Mooney into their second option. Tariq Cohen should be your second option, especially if you just paid him. This guy should touch the ball at least 10 times a game. And I mean on screens, quick passes. There's film on this guy, Pat and Hub, splitting out as a wide receiver and running a post route for a 70-yard gain out there. Yeah. So I know everybody's excited about Miller, but eventually in the NFL, they say this, Hub and Pat, and you guys know this better than me. When someone shows you who they are, just believe them. Mm-hmm. Believe you. Miller has shown you who he is. He's very inconsistent. If he's not going to get the details down, one thing I realized when I played a long time was this. About the third time I heard that this guy got to concentrate on the details, I realized he wasn't going to concentrate on the damn details. So you can't force him. So we need guys to put the ball in the end zone. To me, it's Allen Robinson, Tariq Cohen, Montgomery, and Jimmy Graham. Those are your guys right now. And you got to get those guys the ball, especially like we're playing the Giants. We can't move the ball at all. Throw Tariq a screen. Throw him a screen out there and let him run with the ball. So looking like Coach Nagy said this week, look, we're playing to our players' strengths. And we're, that's why we're running the ball. We have a lot of other things we can do, which worried me when he said that because it means that he's losing his patience a little bit. But we have a lot of other ideas. But right now we're doing what we do well. This week, Pat and Hub, the thing that worries you is if Atlanta does start putting the ball in the end zone, can the Bears keep up?
Yeah, you know, guys, and I have no problem with what they're doing with the running game. I think it's great, you know. And the question that's raised for me, I wrote about this during the week, is for the first 2 years we watch Matt Nagy and everybody says Matt Nagy doesn't want to run the ball. And that's just not true. I mean, he's an NFL coach. He's a head coach. He knows he's got to run the football. He couldn't figure out how to run the football. He'd put in all this exotic passing stuff and all the special trick plays and all that. And you know, we don't even know if he had a run game coordinator, which he does now in Juan Castillo. But they'd go to the run. It wouldn't work. They'd forget about it. They'd go back to all of his favorite pass plays. Well, now this year they come out running the ball. It's working really well. It looks to me like he just can't figure out how to now use his passing game to complement it. Because, Olin, specifically to what you were just talking about, not only do you want to use Tariq Cohn more, you didn't bring Jimmy Graham here to be a blocker. So don't tell me 3 weeks in a row now that the great thing about my tight ends is the way they're blocking. Because, number one, we can see the tape, too. And yes, Demetrius Harris isn't doing a bad job. I've seen Cole Kmet throw a few blocks. Jimmy Graham still waves at people more than he blocks them. He's getting in some people's ways on occasion. But you got a guy who is 6'7", 265. He's open when he's covered, you know, and they're not throwing him the football either. So it just feels to me like they've got an all-new offensive staff. In addition to the problems executing this stuff, you know, the mistakes from Mitch, the drops from Anthony Miller, that kind of thing, I just don't think they have figured out yet how to make all of this work together. And so now the question is it something that Matt Nagy's not going to do? Is that why he, like others, isn't going to ever be a great head coach? Or could this offense be really exciting if they figure out how to put all this stuff together? And Olin, you point out the opposition hasn't been very good. I don't debate that. But at the end of the day, in this unusual season where you didn't have an offseason, it just makes it impossible to know who these Bears are at this point.
Yep, and look, Bill Lazor in Europe, Lazar, inside joke. he talked about that, I think, Hub, this week, and you would know better than me. He talked about packaging plays together, you know, things that look the same, get a run play going. It's almost like the first interception last week, Pat. Why would you run play action out of shotgun? You didn't run very much out of shotgun anyway, right? So the Giants defense didn't bite at all because most of your runs are from under center. So to me, in this that situation, up by as many points as you were, just get Mitch moving out of pocket. Get him moving a little more. Sneak somebody out of the backfield for an easy. I think they had an easy 8-yard gain on that kind of play. They call that a boot or a naked where the line just kind of runs one way and then the quarterback fakes the run and goes the other way. So, look, Hub, we've been talking about for years, Loggins drafted Mitch for that kind of offense. He's been stuck in the Coach Nagy offense, but you got to give Coach Nagy credit. He brought in a bunch of new ideas. Juan Castillo, DeFilippo, Lazor. They're running a different offense. They say they're playing to their strengths. I wish they would have called us midseason last year. We knew what their strengths were. I formation, running the ball, booting Mitch. 2-minute, go no huddle. That's when Mitch operates at his best. So the offense has ran the ball well. The offensive line is held up in pass protection. Just got to stay away from turnovers like they did in the second half last week. And, you know, the funny thing about Pat is, like, you come away thinking, man, the Bears defense doesn't look the same. And I think Hub wrote about this week. I read the article. You come away, Hub, and you're like, they don't look the same. But, gosh, they only gave up 17 points. And I think Hub wrote they're like 3 or 4 in the league and giving up points right now.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, so maybe our standards are a little too high for that defense right now. But the offense is just – there was three and a half quarters in Detroit, and there was a half against the Giants that you worry about.
Yeah, to go back on that defense real quick, to me it's the standards are set so high. You know, you've got the former defensive player – in the league and Khalil Mack, and you've seen him in the past win games. Like last week, I'm yelling, like, just win the game. Sack him. Just get him down. Somebody get him down. And they kept coming down. They had a chance to win the game at the end. But to me, it's the standard of that defense. With the playmakers they have over there, you want them to take over the game and win it when it's the chance to win it. But they did only give up 13 points, which says a lot for them. That, you know, they're still pretty darn good. But Matt Nagy called him great, and I want to see him to be great. And that's just kind of me, I guess, with like a coaching hat on. You know, you always want your guys to be better, and you wanted them to see them to win the game earlier last week than they did.
Pat, we got a break, but I got to come back to one thing. You got to explain it to me because I keep watching that onside kick, you know, that cost the Falcons this game. And, you know, I admire the coach when he tries to, you know, cover for his players, or I wish he would either do it or not do it, as Olin pointed out. But, you know, look at the coach, look at the players, whoever. How do they not fall on that ball? I mean, you know, there's some things that you can talk about coaching, but if you're in the NFL, the ball is rolling. You know, if it doesn't get 10 yards, they can't get it. How did somebody not figure out, gee, why don't I just fall on this ball?
Perfect. I got some thoughts for you. Do you want to finish that now or after the break?
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll do it right. So, okay, what happens on the front line? The front line, normally when the ball's on the tee, you have three or four guys that are blocking, and they go block the, you know, the fast guys coming down the field, and they wait for that high hopper, the ball, to get past the 10-yard line, and you have one or two quote-unquote receivers on the second line that are that get the ball. So the front line guys are always taught in practice, you know, you go block, let the ball get to the second line. So that was something completely unorthodox they've never seen before. I don't know if it's been done in the NFL. The front line should have known. They know to get on the ball. I just think they got completely confused. They were hoping it didn't go 10 yards, and then the ball's just dead. It was just a perfectly executed kick. It was an unorthodox look. And to me, I think it was on the Falcons sideline. They should have been screaming, get on the ball, get on the ball. Somebody should have. It was a mistake on both parts. I guarantee you that coach tells them, he's been in the league a while, and I know he's a good coach, they know the rules. They just didn't do it. They got confused. But the front line normally has to block the back guys or the ball guys, and I think that's what happened.
Yeah, guys, I keep watching that play, and it feels like it takes about 20 minutes for the ball to go 10 yards.
You know what it looked like to me, Pat? And you play football long enough, and then you coach some a little bit, even if it's just little league. You can't just say it to players.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, you better have drilled that exact situation where they get the muscle memory of jumping on the ball, right?
Yeah.
So it looked to me like when I watched the Falcons, and this may go back to what Hub's talking about, only 10 practices, right? Mm-hmm. Not a really an off season. So did you get every situation in? And it looked to me like the players had been told that, but they've never really – gone through it either live or at some speed, like, look, I'm going to throw this ball less than 10 yards. You got to go get it.
Yeah. I mean, that makes complete sense, because that's something you think you, with the limited number of practices, you should overlook that. You know, you got to prioritize what you're going to go over. That's onside kick 101, to know that you can jump on the ball before 10 yards.
One thing with football players, and you know this, Pat, and Hub, you know this. Don't ever assume they know something just because you told them it. You better practice it. You better put the situation out there, because the next thing you know, you get guys bragging about a watermelon kick, and you got to hear about it the whole year.
That's true.
All right, guys. We are late for a break. We're going to catch up right now. Our phone number, 312-644-6767. If you want to join the conversation, you've got the Bet River Sportsbook pregame show with Patrick Manley and Olin Kreutz. Me, I'm Hub Arkush. Right here at 670, the score. Go to BetRivers.com or download the BetRivers app from the App Store right now. We are back in just a moment with the best Bears pregame in town right here on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love, all streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.
You know, it hasn't been a whole lot of conversations other than just knowing that every player is a little bit different each year that passes. You got to treat them a little different. And like we said the other day, you know, we have some older vets on this team, and And so you want to make sure that you're taking care of these guys so that they're not only ready on Sunday, but they're ready as you continue to hopefully get stronger and faster as the season goes on, is the direction you want to go. So there's a little bit of a balance and trust with others that know how to handle these players' bodies, but he's been good with it. To tell you the truth, you can't even, I mean, there's really no tell on it. I mean, it's a, you know, this report that comes out every day and you kind of see what's going on and stuff. And so I really don't worry too much about it.
Chicago Bears head coach Matt Nagy actually was asked about the health of Khalil Mack and got into a conversation about injuries. Guys, it was scary last Sunday and then seeing the reports on Monday. I know we've been trying to figure it out all week long. Fortunately, the Bears pretty much completely healthy at this point. I mean, you've got Khalil Mack is the only guy who keeps popping up on the list, and he keeps playing through it. They say it's just a bit of a strained knee. But you look around the league and the names of the guys who went down, Saquon Barkley for the season. You've got Christian McCaffrey gone for the foreseeable future, probably at least 3 to 4 or 5 weeks. Everywhere you looked, all pro-type players with season-ending injuries. And I wonder, Pat, I'll start with you. I don't know if it's just because there were so many big names on the list. And then this always happens every year. It gets to be week 3, week 4, and there's a bunch of injuries, and we say, oh, my God. But this just feels like a lot more. And you know, when you start tracking injuries, you'll find, you know, players on the injury list is fairly consistent with prior years. But there definitely is a trend towards injuries that are taking away more starts and more games from players, at least this early in the season.
Yeah, it is kind of scary. And I was thinking that last week too, Hub, and I hope it's big games. I hope that's what we're feeling, that this doesn't become a trend to kind of water down the NFL anymore, because you don't want those guys going, you don't want anybody going out, but you don't want the big names going out. But one thing I do see when I always read these injury reports is hamstring. And you think about training camp, what's the one thing that always happens in training camp? I call it hamstring season. Everybody pulls a hamstring. So right now I feel like they're in the middle of their training camp, and maybe these are some of those nagging injuries that, you know, sit out a couple days or a week through training camp and they'll come back and play. But you know, the big injuries are hard to see, especially the key players, like I said. But I'm hoping it's just these preseason injuries, these training camp injuries, and everybody comes back by week 3 or 4 and everybody's fine and we have a normal season.
You know, Olin, the one thing we do have numbers on, and it's not an exact comparison, but 2011 with the lockout was the last time players got into a season without any real off season, although they didn't have the restrictions in 11 that these guys have had this year because of COVID. And hamstrings was the one injury that they did track that were up significantly in 2011 without an offseason because of the lockout. So I suppose that, now I don't know what you can do about it, though. I mean, how do you protect against a hamstring injury?
Well, I've been called a lot of things in my life, Hub, but it's not, none has been doctor. No one has ever called me Dr. Crutes. And I think you told us, Hub, that lockout, your injuries are up 30%. I know there is a period in camp where you have to teach your body how to absorb force and how to deliver force. And there's always an adjustment period to that, things hitting you from all angles, planting your foot in the ground with all that force coming at you, or all that are trying to deliver all kind of force to people. And there is a acclimation period to that kind of contact and using your body that way. And I don't think, actually, I know 10 practices aren't enough. So maybe that's some of the reason why, but we're just guessing. But you can see that teams that do stay healthy, and you have to credit the Bears training staff and coaching staff and nutrition program, the teams that do stay healthy have a big advantage. And we're looking at a game now. We saw a game last week when Saquon Barkley went out while averaging 7 yards a carry. The week before, the Lions lose they have three of their top cornerbacks out, and the Bears start throwing the ball all over the place. So this could be a big storyline for this season, Pat.
Olin, when you go look back at your career, and you just take a full offseason and a full training camp, mm-hmm. How many training camp games did you need before you were talking about absorbing that force, giving that force, that you were ready for a full game? Did you need all four? I guess you didn't play all four, but like, what kind of week were you like, all right, I could line up and play week one?
I think, you know, Pat, for us, usually I'd have to go back to relate to these players. We'd have to go all the way to 2005, I think, to what Lovey went to one a day. And but still, yet we were doing full pads for 2.5 hours, and we went to one a day. And we had, you know, for the line, it was live, right? Because there was no tackling. But for the rest of us, you know, for the guys inside, we were going at it. So I would say 14 to 20 practices is when I felt good. You know, when I felt like I was good to go and I was ready. And if you think about the way the NFL runs things nowadays, and I'm not an expert on the rules, so Hub can by all means correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they only have like 14 total padded practices during the whole year now. So I don't know how many padded practices they had before this season started. I don't know what was live and what wasn't throughout the NFL, but I'm telling you, it's a problem. I'm telling you, you have to teach your body, like we talked about, to deliver force and to absorb force and to shove your foot in the ground as hard as you can versus a 340-pound man coming at you.
Yeah, guys, you know, it's interesting because it's more than 14 padded practices during the season. I believe it was 14 padded practices during training camp before we got to this unusual training camp. But what's interesting about it is that it's the players, you know, and not the owners who are insisting on cutting way back on this. And yet at the same time, now you see these injuries start to occur. So I'm sure it's probably a conversation that's going to happen at the player level, at the NFLPA level. They need to take a look at it and then work with the league to try and, you know, protect the players as best they can. Guys, we've got to squeeze in another real quick break here. We've got Brian Finnernan, former wide receiver for the Atlanta Falcons, now a radio host in Atlanta, going to give us a breakdown on who these Falcons are right now as they get ready to take on the Bears at noon. A very quick commercial message here on The Score, and then we're back with more Best Bears pregame in town right here at 670.
So it's a two-point game with 1:49 to go.
Got to be careful this little dribbler down the middle now.
Yeah. And the ball is recovered by Dallas. The ball spun around. Atlanta looked at it. It rolled across, and Dallas got it.
Rolling on the field is a recovery by Dallas. First down.
How in the world, Dave?
Well, he didn't kick it far enough, so Atlanta backed away from the ball.
And when they backed away,
you got to go in and recover it.
That's the onside kick from last week on Falcons radio that cost the Atlanta Falcons the football game. I think that's fair to say. Yes, Dallas still had to go put the points on the board, but never should have gotten the football back. We want to learn a little bit more about this Atlanta Falcons team. You've got the Bet Rivers Sportsbook pregame show right here at 670 The Score. Your host, Olin Kreutz, Patrick Manley. I am Hub Arkish, and we are now heading down to Atlanta to join former Falcons wide receiver Brian Finneran. Brian is now a radio host in Atlanta, I believe doing morning drive. And so, Brian, I'm going to start with that because I've been doing radio a long time and morning drive was never my favorite shift. How does it go from being an NFL player to getting up at 4:30 every morning and being on the radio?
No, listen, not my favorite time slot, but you do what you got to do for a little while for sure. So we're making it work, and it's been fun. It's got a good group down here, and obviously the radio business being a little crazy these days, so some changes happening. But we're making it in morning drive, although not my favorite. We have a good time. We got a good group.
Brian, I appreciate you taking time for us. We need to get to know the Atlanta Falcons a little bit better. We've heard a lot about the defense that hasn't stopped anybody and the offense that is like a video game, just keeps putting up points like mad. Let's start with that offense. Matt Ryan appears to be playing the best football of his career. What is it that's making that offense go so well?
Well, when you have guys like Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley and Russell Gage and Hayden Hurst and Matt Ryan, you got an opportunity to get some serious passing yards going for sure. If the guy has time to throw the football, which he has this year, he's going to light people up. So that's what's going on. Unfortunately, the run game hasn't hit its stride yet, and then if we can't do that today against the Chicago Bears, it's going to be a long day for Matt Ryan. So I'm waiting for Todd Gurley to show me that burst he had 2, 3, 4 years ago, and I just haven't seen it yet. So the run game's been a little bit disappointing, but all the skilled positions outside of Todd Gurley have been really fun to watch out in the mix, and Matt spreads it around. It's Dirk Koetter is the offensive coordinator, and he's second year in the system, and it's been a crazy deal, and I'm sure Patrick can talk about it in Olin. I mean, we've had our last two offensive coordinators have come in here to learn the system that Kyle Shanahan left here, as opposed to bringing their own stuff. So it's been really strange in that regard. But once they get it down, it kind of blossoms pretty good.
That's interesting. Hey, Brian, it's Patrick here. The Bears are 2-0, and we're all up here in Chicago saying, how good are they? Are they the worst 2-0 team in the NFL? The Falcons down there are 0-2. I guess my question is, are they really an 0-2 team? Are they that bad? I mean, with this offense they have, I know the defense has been struggling, but are they that bad of a team?
They're not. Seattle obviously looks really good this year, so that was our first loss. They put it on us pretty good. And then most people, like you guys came back with, that ridiculous onside kick against Dallas that we lost the game and gave up a 20-point lead at one point. So they're not a really bad football team. It's almost like they just don't know how to win. There's not enough winners on that roster and on that coaching staff to just make it happen. I've been on teams before that just kind of fall into wins because you just know what to do. You're disciplined. You're smart football players, and I think that's what's lacking. They've got too much youth on important positions, and they just don't have that winning gene yet. I think it can happen. 0-2, we're not the worst team in the NFL, but if we can't put our stuff together and win one of these next two games against Chicago or Green Bay, it's going to be a really, really long year. And then if you talk to me in 2 weeks and we're 0-4, then I may tell you we're the worst team in the NFL.
Hey, Brian, Olin Krutz here. On defense hasn't been great for the Falcons this year, but Grady Jarrett is an absolute stud when you watch him on film. And I know they have a bunch of injuries up front, but I'm wondering, today they get Marlon Davidson back, their second-round pick out of Auburn. Could you tell us a little bit about him? I think if they can pair somebody with Grady Jarrett in the middle, that'll give the Bears up front a lot of problems.
Yeah, no doubt. And you think about Grady Jarrett, he's probably like the baby Aaron Donald as far as talent and what he's done so far this year. And the fact that he's stuck in Atlanta, a lot of people don't really know about him. But Grady Jarrett's been an absolute machine the last few years and plays with his hair on fire, gets after people and ruins people's run game and get in the backfield and get sacks too. So if you can match him up with Marlon Davidson, who in college was one of those guys that could line up at defensive end at 290, and get after the quarterback. He could also line up over the guard and between the guard and tackle, guard and center, and disrupt the run game as well. So if he is what we think he could be, that disruptive 290, 300-pound defensive tackle slash DN, depending on down and distance, it could be really awesome. So we were bummed that he was out the first couple weeks of the season. Now he's healthy, we hope, and get in there and make some stuff happen because we need him. Because like you said, Fowler with the ankle, questionable, and Tack McKinley questionable, and all these different things going on. We need as much help as we can up front, and hopefully Marlon Davidson is that guy.
You know, Brian, it's interesting. You said something about, you know, not only the players but this coaching staff knowing how to win. And really, when you go back to this Super Bowl, and I know that can be painful too, but I mean, being up, like, you know, the way you were, has this team ever recovered? You know, they got back to the playoffs. They won a playoff game the next year. And then 18-19 has kind of been going in the wrong direction. Is that the question kind of hanging over Dan Quinn right now? Is can he get them back to winning?
I'm not going to say that we haven't recovered from the Super Bowl because I think that's just hyperbole for the media. The teams have changed so much since then. Personnel has changed. Coaches have changed. Schemes have moved around a little bit, so I'm going to throw that one out the window. But there is something to having a winning gene, and there's an advantage to having certain coaches on your sideline. And I can't remember the last time I was like, oh, yeah, our coaching staff's better than theirs, so we're going to win because our two-minute drill or our fourth-quarter mentality is so much better. When I played for Mike Smith, when Matt Ryan was drafted in 2008, and I played for 3 years with Mike Smith and Mike Mularkey and Terry Rubisky and that coaching staff, I felt like we had an advantage on guys because we didn't hurt ourselves ever. We knew every down and distance. We knew the roles we had to play. We knew the situational football rules that we needed, and everybody followed suit because we drilled it. The coaches drilled it into our heads so many times. When we got in those situations, we didn't freeze and we didn't lose our minds. We just reacted like we were supposed to. So I really do think that was what's missing whether it was a Super Bowl or the onside kick last week, there's something missing, and I think that's what it is.
Brian, that's funny you brought that up, because Olin, I don't know if you remember, when we went down to Atlanta, I think our locker was next to each other in pregame, and you opened up the program, and you're like, look at this coaching staff. And you mentioned to me like how important that is, and that's funny you brought it up, Brian. You just named all the names and all these veteran coaches that, you know, hammer stuff into you and understand situational football, and I think you guys came back and won on the last little route on the sideline or whatever.
Oh, it was ridiculous. Michael Jenkins had a corner route for like 35 yards, and then I think Matt Bryant came in and kicked the game winner with no time on the clock, so you're exactly right.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, let's talk coaching then. If the Bears offense, which we're struggling up here scoring points, how do they need to attack this defense? Obviously, you've gone against Russell Wilson and that good offense, and the Dallas Cowboys had a great second half. How should the Bears attack this defense?
Well, I think they can pick their poison, dude. we're small at linebacker and inexperienced at this point because we've got some injuries. So if you wanted to double team some linemen and get up on the linebacker core, you could pull that off. Our safeties are skinny and fast, and you saw what Zeke Elliott did to KZ last week, which is the highlight reel forever. I was embarrassed. The guy took his soul from him. It was insane. and then if you want to pass the football, you got enough good receivers. And if Trubisky is on point this week, you shouldn't have any problems because our rookie is out with COVID, AJ Terrell, and the other guys are inexperienced enough to take advantage of. So if Chicago plays solid, smart football consistently throughout the game, you got a good chance of pulling that off offensively. So I wouldn't be too worried. I'm just hoping for the best for our defense is what I'm doing right now.
Hey, Brian, first, I'm glad you explained that to me. I don't know if fans realize how important that is, because when I was going over to coaching staff and I saw Greg Knapp and Chris Morgan, I was trying to tie Dirk Koetter to them and figure out what they were doing with their run game and pass game on offense. But after you said that he's trying to learn the system, that all makes sense to me now. But when I look at, first of all, Alex Mack still looks like he's playing at a really high level. And are they working in Hennessy, their rookie? Is he going in and out with James Carpenter? Is that what they're doing on the offensive line?
Yeah, the first couple of weeks they spot played him here and there. I think the first week he might have played like 15 plays, kind of moving him in and out, and more of the same last week. So I'm not sure what their plan is going into this week with him being a young rookie, and I don't know if they've seen enough yet to say plug and play and let him do his thing. But we're excited about what his capabilities are. And we're really excited that you brought up Alex Mack. Alex Mack's no spring chicken, and he's been an unbelievable free agent pickup for the last 3 or 4 years for us. But he's not going to be here much longer, because you get over 30, 31, 32 years old. Football gets real hard for you, and he's one of those guys. But an all-pro, and the fact that Matt Hennessy was drafted, can come in there and take over the center position next year, we're super excited about his abilities and capabilities. So, yeah. They're just kind of spot playing right now, and we'll see what happens today.
Hey, Brian, we're going to have to run, but before we do, one more question for you. And we're visiting with Brian Finneran, former Falcons wide receiver, now morning co-host on sports radio down in Atlanta. And I'm just wondering, what is the mood down there? I mean, does this feel like an absolute must-win game? You know, 0-3, it's not like you can't bounce back, but you'd be 0-2 at home and you know, the first two games were winnable against really good football teams. That's what makes it hard to understand where this Falcons club is at.
Yeah, no doubt. It feels like a must win to me. No disrespect to the Chicago Bears, but they squeaked by Detroit after DeAndre Swift drops a touchdown pass and then find a way to win against the Giants team. So winning in the NFL is not easy. And if you can pull it off anyhow, any way, any manner, good for you. You're a decent football team. But the Falcons, this is a must-win. There's no question about it. You can't do what we did the last couple of years and start 1-7 and 2-6 and expect to come in here and go 0-3 and lose in the fashion that we did last week to the Dallas Cowboys and expect everything to be okay. And then you have to go to Green Bay next week. So forget about it. You got to find a way to win today. There's no question in my mind it's a must-win. And the guys are reeling. I mean, as a fan, I was never a fan of, like, really watching football and cheering for teams until I retired from the NFL back in 2011. But boy, oh boy, am I a fan. I sit in the Super Bowl in the stands in Houston watching my team give up that lead, almost in tears as I walked out of that place. So I know what being a fan's all about the last 10 years, and it's not fun, and we don't feel good about where we're at right now. So this is an absolute must-win.
Well, Brian, you can disrespect the Bears all you want. We do it all the time, and we're still working. So,
you're not disrespecting if you tell the truth. You know?
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
And that's what makes this game so fascinating, because if that Bears defense shows up and plays to its ability, right, which it has not done this year, I mean, we could have a great football game looking at how well the Atlanta offense is playing. So, listen, thank you so much for taking time out for us this morning. Good luck with the radio show, and we will look forward to getting a visit again down the road.
Enjoyed it, guys. Thanks a lot.
That is Brian Finneran. We're going to take a quick break here. Somehow the first hour in the books already. I don't know where the time goes. This pregame show is so much fun to do. It is the Bet Rivers Sportsbook pregame show with Patrick Manley, Olin Kreutz. I'm Hub Arkish, and we are back in just a moment for hour two right here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.